from stpetecatalyst.com.
Hey there, I'm Bill DeYoung, and this is the Arts Alive podcast from the St. Pete Catalyst. I'm so happy to have my friend Roxanne Fay in here with me today. She is one of the most prolific actors in the Tampa Bay area, and just a great performer and a good friend. Do we say actress these days, or do we say actor?
Oh, I don't know. I've always said actor simply because it, you know, what do you, I? This is what I do. It's the action actor. But person who acts.
Because sometimes people say, well, you know, like nobody uses the word comedian anymore to talk about a female comedian.
Right, very rarely.
But I spoke to I don't remember who it was, but a female comedian recently, and she says, well, you know, comedians like me, and it totally threw me off my game, but you don't mind people saying you're an actress.
No.
Because it's all this gender, that's bullshit. You're a great actor.
Well, thank you.
She's a great actor, folks. I want to run down a couple of things that Roxanne has done in the last 2 years. Okay, and I suppose I will miss something here, but I just want you all to see how impressive this sounds. She's currently in the musical Oz, the new musical, it's called, at Freefall Theater, playing Matilda Jocelyn Gage, who is a suffragette and a hot potato and an interesting, almost non-human character. You'll see if you go to see it. She was also in the comedy Native Gardens over at the Off Central. I didn't know, I'd never seen you do a comedy before, and that was so good. The stuff that they do at Off Central has really been impressive.
Oh, yeah.
Lately, yeah. And that's another thing I want to get into. You were in Hamlet over at Jobsite.
Yes.
And the work you've done at Jobsite is something we're going to talk about. You were in a film called Breton and the Muse over at the Dalí Museum. Tell me what that was exactly.
That was actually a commissioned work. Hank Hine, the executive director of the Dalí Museum, commissioned me to write the film and create the film for the Midnight in Paris exhibition that was done in conjunction with the Centre Pompidou in Paris. And so, yes, it was an all-professional movie set. We were at Cassis Restaurant after it closed, and we were there from, I think, 10 o'clock at night until 6 o'clock the next morning.
Was this you and Ned Avril Snell?
Myself, Ned Avril Snell, and Alan Moni.
He's been in here and done a podcast, too, yeah. And Alan as well. So tell us who Breton was so we can put this in context. Well,
André Breton is called the father of surrealism. Ah. He was really the guiding light of the surrealist movement. And in 1929, there was actually a rift, a break, between the surrealists, and some of them no longer wanted Breton to tell them how to make their art and what their art should be.
I can relate.
Especially mm-hmm. Dalí, or rather his wife, who was his manager, muse. Mm-hmm. Breton felt that the artist should not make money from his work. And, of course, that wasn't going to fly with Gala. And he was so very, very popular. And I think that really had a lot to do with it, was the fact that Dalí was seeing so much success. And I think it sort of rankled Breton the wrong way.
And you were Gala in the film.
Yes, I've played Gala for several years now, since the opening of the mm-hmm. new museum in 2011.
I know, since the opening Gala.
Yes, that's right. It's exactly why we did it. Yeah.
Ooh, that was funny. Did you write that film as well?
I wrote the film.
Yeah.
And Dr. Hine reviewed it as I was writing to make sure that it was the content was correct. And
before that, you were the recipient of a 2022 Professional Artist Grant from our friends at Creative Panelists.
Yes. Which,
did you use that to bankroll the film?
No. Actually, I got the Creative Panelists Grant in 2016.
I have it as 2022.
And I got it again in 2020.
Oh, there you go.
It's a five-year gap. You have to wait 5 years. But for 2022, I actually used the money to pay my tuition, room and board in Prague to study for 6 weeks and perform with the Prague Shakespeare Company, which is an English-speaking Shakespeare company in Prague.
Oh, we've got to go back and talk about that. You were also in a play called Breadcrumbs over at Jobsite with Debbie Yonis. This we're going back a little bit, but mm-hmm. Breadcrumbs was really nice. I liked one a lot. And Jobsite, anybody who listens to this podcast know that I like Jobsite a lot. I really like because it's innovative and sometimes it's weird, but it's always good. And I really like that.
I'm kind of fond of Jobsite myself.
Yeah, I think you probably are. And I've seen you in so many things over there. My Unspeakable Confessions, Gala declines to explain herself. Here's Gala again. Dali's muse and wife and manager and all sorts of other things. And this was a one-woman show at the Dali, was it not?
Yes, it was written by Heather Jones, who is a novelist and writer here in town. And it was written to celebrate the opening of the new building in 2011. So we did it in 2011, and we have tried to do it each year in September because that is her birth month.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, a couple things have gotten in the way, a little pandemic here
pesky thing.
Yeah.
So you brought it back.
Yes, yeah. She's always very popular because Galo is she's quite a character. You'd almost believe we were exaggerating about her, but we're not. She was not a really nice lady, but she was determined.
Well, you know, I mean, I think she was a force to be reckoned with, her and Dali in partnership. And she definitely wore the pants in the family, as I understand it.
Oh, yes.
And also in 2021, 22, you directed some little play about a ship's captain or something.
Yeah, that.
I heard a little bit about
that. Yeah, Mayday. Yeah, that was really terrific. I enjoyed that very much.
I wrote that one, folks. Hey, yeah. Yay. Okay, let's get that out of the way. But that was nice. Also, in the midst of all of this, you're up at Bridge Street Theater. You're playing Mary Tyrone in Long Day's Journey tonight, and she wins the fabulous Berkey Award. Now, down here, I guess it would be the Petey Award or something, but the Berkey. Where is Bridge Street Theater?
Bridge Street Theater is in Catskill, New York, which is just outside of Hudson, New York, the top of the Amtrak line. It's the terminus of the Amtrak line from New York City. It's about, let's just say, it's about an hour and a half out of the city when you take the metro. It's a wonderful theater that was conceived and born of two of my very dear friends, Stephen Patterson and John Soule. And they have been doing amazing work for many, many years and have always blessed me with having me come up there and do something in their season.
That's nice, isn't it? Just sort of leave the humidity and everything familiar for a while and just switch it up.
Yeah. Catskill is about as different as you can get, really, from St. Petersburg.
It makes me think of Leahanny Youngman and the Mrs. Maisel and all that stuff.
It's a beautiful little village, and it's situated right where the Catskill River crosses into the Hudson.
When did you do this thing in Prague?
Last summer.
What was that like?
That was really interesting. I was able to do some things and learn and study some things that I have always wanted to do but never had an opportunity or couldn't find an instructor. They had several instructors who were prolific clowns. Physical clowns.
I've had a few instructors who were real clowns too.
Hello. Physical clowns and one who specialized in Buffon and physical clowning. Uh-huh. And we had a wonderful man named Rupesh Tilu, who was from India. And he is the head of an organization called Clowns Without Borders. And they actually go to refugee camps and entertain the children and teach, play clown games with them. And
you were learning clowning in Czechoslovakia? It's not called Czechoslovakia
it's
anymore.
The Czech Republic.
Thank you, folks.
Yeah. Yes, and also we had extensive Shakespeare training, vocal training, things like that. And then we were also in rehearsals. We did two shows in the 6 weeks that I was there. Well, actually, there were several shows being done, but each student had the opportunity to do two shows while they were there. And I really wanted to do the clowns. So I had the opportunity to play Dogberry in Much Ado About Nothing, whom I think is probably the most difficult clown to play in all of Shakespeare because he's not really the funny one. He's absolutely the straight man. And when you realize that Verges, who's his little buddy, is the funny one, or can be, and he certainly was in ours, then when you really play Dogberry for a straight man, he becomes really, really funny.
Do you ever stop learning as an actor?
God, I hope not.
I mean, that's kind of the goal, isn't it? To sort of keep that net open all the time
for
what comes your way. Yeah. So that was a real learning experience.
And we did an adaptation of The Taming of the Shrew that was written by Lisa Volpe, who is one of the really most renowned actors who does gender-crossed roles. She plays... Mm-hmm. She's played Shylock. She's played Richard III. She's amazing. So she wrote this adaptation of Taming of the Shrew that wasn't just cross-gendered. It wasn't that we had women playing Petruchio. It was that Petruchio was a woman, Petruchia.
It lends itself to that. I've heard this, that you can just flip things.
It's amazing with that particular show. You kind of look at it and go, wow, I don't know if I can look at the show the same way anymore. Wow. It really changes a lot of the dynamic. Yeah. So I got to play the, in Shakespeare, would call him Grumio, and we called her Grumia in our production. So she was also the clown in that show. So I got to do two clowns in the shows over there.
Shakespeare, that's so interesting to me that it's almost like I'm a huge fan of the Beatles, and we're not equating the Beatles with Shakespeare here, but I still find new things listening to Rubber Soul and Revolver.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I still, and people say, it's all this creaky old music, man. It's not. I still get a chill when I hear a bass run that I had never noticed before. Right. It's that way with Shakespeare, isn't it?
Right, because wherever you are at that moment in time is going to sort of influence what you get out of it or what you see that you didn't see before.
Oh, yeah. I never thought of it that way, but yeah.
Because I approached Much Ado About Nothing very differently than I approached it when I did it the first time for Job Site, because I was playing Beatrice, the female lead.
Yeah.
And as Dogberry, it's a totally different world for him than it is for her.
I was looking at, I actually wrote down like the last, I don't know how many years of Job Site shows that you've done. I did some research here, Rox, and I saw Much Ado About Nothing. Obviously, you did Henry V, which was that leathery sort of one, I believe, a couple of years ago.
That was great.
You were in this Hamlet recently with incredible makeup on, and it was such a cool show. The Tempest, which was brilliant.
Thank you.
Absolutely brilliant. And As You Like It, I have Twelfth Night, I have Much Ado, and then I come back to your one-woman show, Thrice to Mine, which you've done here a number of times, which has a Shakespearean angle to it. Tell us about that one and why that was important to you.
That was the first that was what the first Creative Pinellas grant funded was my opportunity to go to Scotland. I was named a resident writing fellow to the Hawthornden Castle Estate. So I got to go up to Scotland for a month and live in a castle.
Isn't that nice?
And it was great to be in Scotland because you're really surrounded by where you are writing about.
Oh, yeah.
And it was Midlothian, which is not quite the Highlands, but not far from where Lady Macbeth would have existed. What got me about her was that she is a historical figure. She did live. She was a real person.
Uh-huh.
And Macbeth was a real person. And, you know, these other characters, the Malcolm characters and the Duncan characters, they're all real. Except that Shakespeare's story is not their story. It's not her story.
Isn't that like James Cameron and Titanic?
Right.
Kind of the same thing.
Just taking liberties because he was writing a show that he wanted to be entertaining. And also, when Shakespeare was writing, he was writing for the court. So he's either writing for the king or the queen, who was ever on, you know, while he was in his lifetime. So the Macduff character is actually related to the monarch. It's Elizabeth I. And so that's why the Macduff character is the hero, is the good guy in the show. Macbeth had to be a bad guy, and Lady Macbeth had to be a bad guy.
So what was Thrice to Mine?
Thrice to Mine was her history, was actually my take on her history.
A backstory thing.
Her actual history is very sparse. We don't know a whole lot about her.
Yeah.
We don't even, once Macbeth died, because he actually ruled for 17 years, and he was a very, very good ruler, and he did a lot of progressive things. But once he died, her son from her first marriage became the king for a year and then was killed in battle by Malcolm. Mm. And once Macbeth dies and Lulach, which is her son, ascends the throne, she disappears. She disappears from history. And I'm like, why? Why did she disappear? Because she was a woman and quite insignificant to anyone at that time. But I thought, well, what happened to her? If she lived on, what would happen to her as a dowager queen? What would happen to her? And how would she deal with things? And what if there was some little twist here or there, you know, that I could add to it. And I wanted to use a lot of the witchcraft because the witches are so compelling and so much, you know, this catalyst that makes people do things.
Yeah.
So the witches are present as voices in the show. And just lead her on her own kind of journey, which actually her journey is just to herself and to her own strength and how to survive. And because she has to get away from Malcolm. He wanted to marry her, of course, because she had the bloodline. She was actually of the purest of bloodlines as a direct descendant of Kenneth, who brought the Picts over to Scotland and became the Scots people. So, you know, there's something about the blood being that pure, and everybody, he wanted to marry her and she didn't want to marry
her. There must be something, you know, I do a lot of research in the work that I do, and there must be something really fascinating about digging into all of that
stuff. Oh, it's great. And especially when you're running around in a medieval castle.
Yeah, when you're there.
That was written.
Sure.
The castle was begun in the 13th century. It was renovated in the 16th century, and it's still there, but it has a dungeon. And we got to go and see it. You can't go just plain go down, but then had catacombs and all these different things.
Where's Roxanne? She's been in the dungeon a couple hours now.
She's gone. Okay. She didn't finish her supper. We put her in the dungeon. But running around in a medieval castle and sort of imagining living that way. And then the countryside that we were surrounded by, it was really quite extraordinary. The castle itself was about a mile away from Rosslyn Chapel, which is that very central point at the end of the Da Vinci Code where they decide that that's where the chalice of Mary Magdalene must be, and they all go to Rosslyn Chapel.
Sorry, I read the book, forgot the movie completely. Probably a good idea. But
the book is great.
Where are you from and why did you become an actor?
I was adopted from an orphanage when I was 7 days old. I was born in Burlington, Vermont. And my father, my adopted father, Milton, was in the Air Force.
Yeah.
So we moved a lot. But I always enjoyed singing. I was extremely taken with Carol Burnett. And my dad worked hours so that he didn't see Carol Burnett at night. So when he would come home the next morning, he would say, well, what happened on Carol Burnett tonight? And I literally would get on top of the coffee table and do the show for him.
You do the whole Scarlett O'Hara with the curtain rod?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do a mean Mrs. Wiggins. And still make my mother laugh.
My mother loved that show. We saw a taping of it in 72.
Really?
When we're done, I'll tell you about it. At Television City in Hollywood.
It's brilliant. It was a brilliant piece of work. And nobody knew when she came down those stairs in that curtain that she was going to come down in that curtain.
I heard that, yeah.
Nobody on stage knew it except her and Bob Mackey.
So that was a great inspiration to you.
It was. I loved Carol Burnett.
You were like, boy, I'm getting laughs here. I really like this.
When I was in, I think, second grade, I had always loved to sing, and my teacher asked me to sing the opening prayer to the PTA meeting. And I remember my mother has told me the story that I came to her and I said, I'm nervous. I don't know if I can do it. She said, well, your daddy and I will be in the front and just sing it to us and pretend those other people aren't there. I had to sing a cappella. "'Tis a gift to be simple." I'll never forget that. So that was kind of it, you know, and I did the whole singing into hairbrushes. And so I was going to be a rock star. I wasn't going to be an actor.
So was I. Isn't that funny?
Well, and it wasn't happened? Until high school. Really, it wasn't until I met June.
Yeah.
My best friend.
Hi, June. June's in the room with us. Hey, June.
Hello.
There she is.
we met in high school. I had always done forensics, poetry reading, things like that. And when I got to St. Pete High, at the time, I'm sure it's wonderful now, but at the time, the forensics team was sort of like, not great.
Yeah.
But they announced the auditions for the school play, and I thought, well, that's kind of like forensics. I'll go do that. The show that we did was called A Spoon River Anthology by Edgar Lee Masters, and it's a series of monologues of people who are literally speaking from beyond the grave in this graveyard. I got this great monologue. Lo and behold, my picture was on the cover of the Weekender. First show out of the gate.
She got a taste of fame here, June. That's what happened.
That's it. I was like, oh my gosh, look at that. People actually want to watch people do this. This is great.
Yeah.
And I got into what was then called St. Petersburg Little Theater, City Theater.
Oh, sure, yeah.
With
there's a whole history of that in Vintage St. Pete, Volume 3, coming soon to a bookstore near you.
There you go.
Yeah.
Susan Demers, who was, I think is still on the board there, and Tim Flood and Seth Keyes, and I met them all there. And Susan Demers was really one of my very first directors ever. And she has always been there for me and come to see stuff I do. And we see each other from time to time. We judge for the Walker's Rising Stars scholarships.
Right.
And so I get to see her then. And
so you just started doing as much as you could because you liked it so much.
Yeah, I decided to major in it in college. Mm-hmm. Went to Florida State University. Mm-hmm. And when I graduated from Florida State, I was actually in the class of 1986 for the Burt Reynolds Institute for Theater Training.
Mm.
And it was an amazing year. It was a very difficult year because we were understudying all of the main stage shows.
You were in Jupiter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Doing our own shows in classes with people that Burt would bring in. And we were the crew for the main stage show. So we were never slept. We never slept for an entire 52 weeks. But it was great. And the people that Burt brought in, and especially Burt himself, were such a rich fountain of, you know, knowledge and experience and compassion.
He was so incredibly proud of that place. The one time I sat with him was in that building, and we sat and we did an interview, and he, you know, and I met Charles Nelson Reilly in those days, and they would all say, imagine, look what this guy's done.
Yeah, was very proud of it, and he was a wonderful director, a wonderful instructor, a wonderful person.
Mm-hmm.
Charles Nelson Reilly was actually our master's acting teacher, and the man was amazing.
I thought he was great. I really enjoyed him
His
a lot,
mind
around him.
Was so facile, and he was just such an amazing human being.
Wow, I didn't know this about you. This is very cool.
Yeah,
wow.
So after that, we were there for 52 weeks, which at the time, back in the day, was how many weeks you had to have as an apprentice or an equity member candidate to be able to join the union.
Right.
So Burt gave us all our cards, and our very first equity show ever was our last show there. So we did Annie, and Charles Nelson Reilly directed it.
Yeah.
And we had an original cast member in it. Alice Ghostly was Miss Hannigan.
Wow.
It was just an amazing experience. You know, really got to meet people who they were in this business, and they were successful, and this is what they were doing. You know?
Once after when he was about to close the museum, the guy that ran the museum for Burt sort of let me loose in a stock room or something. And they had boxes of every program going back to the early days of the dinner theater.
Right.
You know, and it was Vincent Gardenia and, you know, and Sally Field.
Yeah.
And I remember, I think it was Mr. Roberts with Martin Sheen.
Yeah.
With Emilio Estevez and Charlie Sheen.
Yes.
You know, his, like, teenage sons.
Yes.
It was amazing the people that came and went through that place.
Yeah.
Judge Reinhold started working there. I talked to him once.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. Judd Nelson was in one of the shows when we were there. And he was still, you know, the Breakfast Club guy at that time. He was very young. It was a show called Orphans.
Was it always a given that you would come back to Tampa St. Pete?
No.
No?
No.
You thought you were going to go off and be a film star?
I went to New York. No. When I graduated from college and then Burt, if you were an actor and not necessarily a really pretty actor, you went to New York. If you were pretty, you would go to L.A. That was how it was back then. And I was going to be an actor, so I went to New York City, and I was there for 5 years, and the best thing that ever came out of that time in New York City was that I spent 3.5 years on and off on a cruise ship in Hawaii, which was fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
And at one point, we lost our stage manager, and I was actually able to gig my best friend onto a ship with me, and we raised all kinds of havoc in the Hawaiian Islands.
Yay, June.
It was great.
Wow.
But no, I did not really. The last thing I had booked, it was actually the tour for the Oslo.
Mm-hmm.
And we ended our tour in Brooklyn at the Brooklyn Academy of Music. And I was able to go back to my apartment and kind of hang out. And my rent, my lease was coming up. My roommate didn't want to stay. I didn't really want to. I didn't know what was going on. Mm-hmm. And the company, the Oslo, said, well, if you want to load up all your stuff and come home, you can just put it in the big van with the set, and provided you drive the Ryder truck home. I was like, sure, because I had already been driving the Ryder truck.
Okay, yeah,
right. So, yes, me and my 18-foot Ryder truck in the streets of Manhattan, and then came home, and I was here for, like a year, and then June and I decided to go up to Chicago for like these unified auditions and interviews for stage managers. I fell in love with Chicago. I had some friends up there. Mm-hmm. And June went home on the plane, and I called my mom and I said, send my stuff. Mm. So I was in Chicago for 12 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. When did you end up landing back here? Just to give me a sense of the
time. Left Chicago in 2004. I spent the year of 2005 in Honolulu. I mm-hmm. actually lived on land in Honolulu for the year of 2005. Came home thinking I would go back to Hawaii.
Yeah.
But my mother was having total hip replacement, and I thought, it's kind of far away. So I came home thinking that I would go back to Hawaii, and then life happened, and I didn't.
Uh-huh.
So.
Well, how's this for a segue? Amy and I met your mom when we went to see Oz a couple of weeks ago after it opened. She was very, very sweet. And I think Amy met her in the bathroom and they got to talking.
Probably.
And whatever it was. And let's talk about Oz because it's going on through the 9th of July.
Yes. Yeah.
I've told you probably too many times already that I had, because I met you years later, I had no idea you could sing. and there she was singing. I'm like, oh, look at this. This woman can do anything.
Oh, thank you.
What's the experience been like?
Well, it's funny. I love it when people say, oh, I didn't know you could sing. Because when I first started out, in even in Jupiter and in New York, all I did was musical theater. I was on the ships. It was all musical. So things just sort of evolved, I guess. And I started doing more dramatic work and was more pursuant of Shakespeare and that.
Yeah.
Although, I have sung in Shakespeare, but I always love it when people say, I didn't know you could sing.
Well, I assumed you could. I just never heard you sing before, It's like, oh, look at that.
Well, Free Fall's very first show 15 years ago mm-hmm. was called The Wild Party.
Yeah.
And I got to be in that and meet Eric. And also David Foley, who plays Frank Baum in Oz. And we hadn't seen each other really for that 15 years.
Wow.
So it's really a joy to be working with him again. David is amazing. He was in Phantom of the Opera tour. He's going to be going out with Funny Girl. He's just this really wonderful person. I just love him.
What are the challenges, if there are any? I suppose there are, to doing something that no one's ever done before. I asked Eric and Michael this very thing.
Mm-hmm.
What are you looking at when you go to throw it up on its feet and go, what do we do now?
Well, for me, it was about learning about who the person you're playing.
Uh-huh.
And the things that Eric and Michael chose to say about each person and what was important to them that people know.
Mm-hmm.
And, Michael has been a Wizard of Oz devotee since he was a young child.
Oh, yeah.
And he knows things about this, the history of this show. I did not know that it was a Broadway show in Frank's lifetime.
Mm, yeah.
And then he did not live to see the movie. And then, of course, after that, it was also adapted again for the stage. So
you learn all kinds of things just in the process.
Right. Well, especially about Matilda Jocelyn Gage.
Sure.
That she was, yes, a suffragette with Susan B. Anthony and Elizabeth Cady Stanton. She was to the left of them.
Yes.
She rallied and lobbied with Cornell University to admit her daughter into the law school there, only to have Maude then leave.
I'm not doing it. I know.
She left law school to marry Frank.
Big point of contention in the show. I remember this.
Yeah. but she was also an advocate for indigenous people's rights.
Wow.
She had an amazing life of her own and children at the same time. She had, I think there were four siblings.
So it's been good and the crowd's been good.
It's lovely. It is a joy. Mm-hmm. David and I have kind of remarked on this to each other several times. Like, I can be in the middle of the show and it just dawns on me, God, I love doing this show. this is great. I love doing this show.
What's next for you? Are you going into Rosencrantz?
Yes. We are actually reuniting the bulk of the Hamlet cast into Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead.
At Jobsite. In, what is it, August, September?
September.
Yeah. Roxanne Fay, what a pleasure to have you here. It's always great talking to
you. Nice to talk to you, too.
And June, thanks for coming in. And I'm Bill DeYoung. We're gonna say goodbye for now, and we'll see you next week.
From stpcatalyst.com.